You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd, and this is Tom Talks.
Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of Tom Talks. Today, we're going to talk about Mission Impossible. With me today is a very special guest. They are a journalist for Detroit Free Press. They are a managing editor for 14 East, and they emailed the CIA when they were 11 to ask for a job. Welcome to my show, Cam Rodriguez. Cam, did you get the job?
Hi, Connor. No, I did not get the job. They told me I wasn't qualified. They said I needed a bachelor's degree and to know two languages. So
that's so rude. You were 11 years old. They should have hired you.
I thought I would have been the perfect recruit, but apparently not, you know? So
What were you going to do for them? What was the job that you applied for?
Well, okay, so I did not apply for a specific listing. It was more of me emailing and saying, hey, I have a great idea for you. What if you hired an 11-year-old? No one would ever think that I was a spy. I was very much into the idea of being like some sort of like Alex Rider, Gallagher Girls, some sort of prematurely aged spy type situation. That was definitely something I wanted.
I think that would have been phenomenal. I think, have you pursued any sort of spy career recently, or you wouldn't tell me if you did?
Espionage is, it is a felony against the United States.
You know, well, what if you're working for them? I don't know.
But no, I have not pursued it as a career. No, I've actually become probably what the CIA would most dislike me to be, which is a journalist.
That's true. So okay. What are you doing with Detroit Free Press? You're not in Detroit.
I'm not in Detroit. No, I'm in Illinois, but I got hired sort of, I got a fellowship. So I'm working with a media company called Harkin and the American Press Institute, and they basically took 30-something college journalists and recent grads and just plopped them into battleground state newsrooms. So Michigan is a swing state, a battleground state, and I'm going to be reporting with them until December on misinformation and militia activity and the election.
You get to cover militia activity? That's so cool. But also yeah, terrifying.
I didn't think that militia activity would be something that I would have to be concerned about. I was like, oh, militia activity, like, that's never gonna happen, like militias. And then a couple days later, there was like the whole plot that was released to like kidnap the governor of Michigan, and that was like the weekend before I started working with the Free Press. And I was like, great. Okay. Militias are real. They're problems.
What a turn. What a big shift. You're like, where do you, election coverage. This would be fun and fine. You've worked with some elections in the past, haven't you? You've worked on like election staffs, right?
Yeah. So in high school and into college, I wasn't old enough to vote. And so I decided to become an election judge or a poll worker. So essentially I, you know, register people to vote, pass out ballots. I did that for a few elections. I've worked political campaigns in the past, so that's given me a completely different perspective.
Are you stressed? Are you excited for this election?
I'm incredibly terrified. I don't know what to expect because we're probably not going to have results on election night, which is something that I think needs to be stressed a little bit more, is like we're not probably not going to have results on election night, particularly because of vote by mail and absentee ballots, which is totally okay. Like, it's totally fine. Technically, you have up until 2 weeks after, and all ballots stop getting counted 2 weeks after the election, specifically in Illinois. But like, it's definitely stressful. Every day becomes worse. And I'm just like really hoping that it'll all be okay. Just trying to be a little bit of an optimist through it all, but it's existential dread is easy to come by right now. So
truly, What advice would you, because you're very informed. I would put you at the top of the people I know who are informed about things. What advice would you give to people who might not have voted yet? Speak to the crowd, even though the crowd is like my family and they've all already voted.
Well, if you haven't voted yet, depends on what state you're in. If you're in Illinois, you can register to vote up until the day of the election. All you need are two forms of identification. You can use your student ID. You can use your driver's license or a utility bill or a piece of mail, a postcard, whatever. I would recommend voting. You don't have to vote for everyone on the ballot. You only have to vote for like the races that you care about, I guess, to put it one way. So if all you want to vote for is president, you can do that. And then you can just turn your ballot in. You don't even have to vote for everyone else if you don't want to. Or if you want to vote for other people and you don't want to vote for president, like whatever floats your boat. But I would recommend voting because, like, think about it. Like, if down the line, like, people are like, oh, who did you vote for? What did you vote for? And you're like, oh, I didn't vote. Like, be like, really? You didn't vote? Like, not like in a shaming kind of way, but it just kind of, there's nothing really holding me back from voting, especially in Illinois, specifically in states that have pretty robust early voting laws. Not every state does, which sucks. And a lot of states make it really hard to vote. You know, there are a lot of resources. I'm a resource. Hit me up. I would love to help you vote.
So. Oh, yeah. Follow, for the listeners at home, follow Cam on Twitter for like the best updates on just like everything, really. Yeah. So you work as a managing editor for 14 East. Tell us what's going on with 14 East right now.
A lot's been going on at 14 East. On Friday, October 23rd, there we go, date of reference. I don't know. Recently, we just won first place for the Pinnacle Awards, which is the College Media Awards, for best four-year college media outlet of the year, which is crazy.
Ooh, congratulations.
Like an award that I didn't even know we would qualify for. Thank you. It's kind of crazy. But yeah, so that's something that's happened. We just released our policing issue, which has a lot of really cool stories. We've been moving and shaking. We hired new editors and new staff writers, and I can't wait to kind of get them on the team and see what else they decide to write. It'll be really sweet.
That's awesome. When is your next issue coming out?
Yeah, so 14 East's next issue is the food issue. We did one last year, I think around this time as well, like around November. So it'll run mid-November. It'll be about food and about restaurants. And it looks like it won't just be about, you know, like recipes and restaurant reviews. It's looking like it'll be really full of personal essays and also investigative pieces too. So I'm really excited. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be really sweet. I'm very excited. I think we were just going through story ideas and projects people wanted to work on, and everything seemed really sweet.
Well, this is Tom Talks. We should probably talk some Tom.
That would probably be good. Yeah.
At least a little bit. I'll go through. There's a few questions that I ask all of the guests on the show. How familiar would you say you are with Tom Cruise's filmography?
Not as familiar as you.
But sure.
Pretty familiar overall. I would not say that I am a Tom Cruise like connoisseur, but I am. I have watched a good amount of his movies.
Okay. What's your favorite?
The Mission Impossible series, of course.
Just all of them generally.
All of them. Yeah.
That's a lot of the reason why I wanted to have you on. The next question, what is the most Tom Cruise thing that you have ever done?
So the most Tom Cruise thing I've ever done. I know that Tom Cruise likes to do his own stunts, and he's infamous for wanting to do his own stunts, specifically with the Mission Impossible series. And there was one time, and I can't remember which movie it is, and I think it was Ghost Protocol, but it might have been Rogue Nation, where he's jumping onto a building and he broke his foot. Like, he like broke his ankle trying to jump onto this building. Yeah, so I guess like I've done that. I haven't broken my foot, but like I've definitely done the thing where I'm like, I can do it, I can do it. And my friends are like, you're gonna hurt yourself, don't do it. And I'm like, I got this. I wanna do it. I'm perfectly capable. I'm fine, I'm great. And then I would just do it and I would get hurt. So That's a pretty Tom Cruise thing. I also used to rock climb for a while, so like rappelling.
We'll talk through some Mission Impossible stuff in a second. The next thing that I ask all of my guests, I give every single guest 1 minute to say whatever you want to Tom Cruise. In the event that Tom Cruise ever listens to this podcast, I'm going to super cut all of these minutes together so he can listen to just this. So I'll hold up a timer and you have 1 minute to say whatever you want to Tom. Are you ready?
No, I need just a second. Hold on. Okay. I gotta think about this. Okay.
Are you ready? Okay. Yeah. Your time starts now.
Hi, Tom. How are you? I hope you're doing well. I'm doing great. My name's Cam. I grew up watching your movies. I feel like some of them are dad movies, you know, like The Firm is like a big dad movie, even though I'd already seen it multiple times because he had been like, oh, you got to watch this. Scientology, how about that? You know, we all kind of make bad decisions. I really hope that, if you ever need help dealing with Scientology, I'm a gal, just like, come on by. I want to do an expose about Scientology. I would love your help. I think it would be really cool. Especially the blackmail-y part. I would love to know more about that. I think that's really important. But yeah, I don't know. I know you've also said some like sus stuff about like psychiatry. That's kind of weird. Like maybe don't. It's pretty good. But best wishes. XOXO. Cam.
I love that sign off. It's phenomenal. All right, we're going to head into a commercial break right now. Come back after the break while we do an impossible mission.
I'm voting because I want to make sure that everyone feels welcome in our country.
I vote because my parents can't.
I vote because I really hate decisions being made without my input.
I vote because I want a say in my future.
I vote because I want my voice heard.
I'm voting because the future of this city matters to me.
I'm voting because everyone always talks about how bad things are. I want to make them better.
I vote for the future. So, why do you vote? Tuesday, November 6th is midterm election day, and your vote is your voice. To find your polling place in Chicago, visit chicagoelections.com. This message was brought to you by Radio DePaul, Chicago's college connection.
You're listening to Radio DePaul. Awarded Best Station in the Nation 2020.
Hello and welcome back to Tom Talks. You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd and I'm here with Cam Rodriguez on Tom Talks. Cam, it is time for us to do an impossible mission.
Yeah, I can't wait. I really can't wait.
So you have no clue. I'm gonna try and bring you on for each Mission Impossible episode. And each time there will be a totally different mission that you will not know until it happens. I'm very excited for this. Our mission, because it's not just your mission, it's our mission, should we choose to accept it, is to build the perfect action movie. We must cast the characters, come up with a vague plot synopsis, and come up with a couple other specific things that are all quintessential to action films. And we can say action thriller spy movie specifically. Yeah. And we have 30 minutes. So this is a timed activity. Are you ready? Are you excited?
I am so ready. Oh my God. I am over the moon. Let's get started.
Our 30 minutes begins now. I'm going to share my screen with you also because I have a little format thing. We have to come up with the title of the film, the names of the characters, and I have little archetypes set for us so we can think of each archetype individually. That is pretty much essential in every single action movie, and then we should come up with actors for them. We should also come up with, like, who writes the theme song to our action movie, and what is, like, the big opening heist or opening task that they're completing. What is the essential cool stunt? You know, in Mission Impossible 2, it's the motorcycle jump, drop kick, weird John Woo thing. What is the central conflict? Is it nuclear holocaust? Is it the press is going wild like it is in Tomorrow Never Dies, a James Bond film? What is the twist at the end? What is the nail-biting resolution? What is it coming down to the wire? So these are the things that we've got to come up with. And I think it'll be wild. It'll be a fun time. So let's start with some casting choices. I think we can start with our people. Let's start with the nemesis, actually. Let's start. Who do you think is a good villain actor? And part of the rules, they've got to be living today. We can't, that way, if we're pitching this to an executive, we can't say like, this dead person is the best actor for the job, because lo and behold, they can't do it.
I feel like Jude Law makes a really good villain. See, like, Road to Perdition, Rise of the Guardians. He's a really great villain character. I could see him as a nemesis.
I do like Jude Law. Jude Law is an excellent choice. I love him in Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could agree with you that Jude Law is an old British guy. What do we think? I'm just going to put, like, what do we think his profession is? What is the villain doing?
I'm trying to think of like those quintessential action movies. And there are some where the villain just, like, literally does not have a job. Like, all they do, they're just rich. Like, they're, like, hedge fund managers or something. Or they own, like, a bajillion. Like, they own a lot of real estate or something. I don't know. But I feel like I need him to have some sort of, like, I don't want it to be obvious that he's a villain just based on his profession. Like, like a hitman is like an obvious villain profession, but like I'm trying to think of like a unassuming but still bad profession.
I think you were onto something with like the owns a lot of real estate. Like, he could be an international real estate mogul, and then that would give him reason to be in a bunch of different countries, which I feel like is super quintessential in action films.
That is true. I feel like. Or like he's like a tax assessor, like, you know, something to do with property where he does have to travel frequently.
Okay, so I'm going to put property, comma, tax, comma, travel. So we know he's international. We know he has money, but he himself, like, he will get his hands dirty, because I think Jude Law would want that. He'd want to be part of that action sequence a little bit and not just have it be a henchman.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cause assassins are generally like, those are the henchmen kind of like, that's like Dave Bautista in Skyfall, I think, is a phenomenal henchman.
I genuinely can't remember. I do just know that Dave Bautista would be a good henchman overall.
I do like him. Have I told you I've started watching all of the James Bond movies?
That sounds like a great next podcast.
It's going to be probably, if I do a sequel, that'll be the sequel. I feel like he's a great henchman. He doesn't say a single word in that movie. Not one word. He just gouges a dude's eyeballs out because he's wearing like two spiky rings on his thumbs. Which makes him terrifying. I'm wondering if we could bring on another like professional wrestler. I just don't know enough professional wrestlers.
I don't know any professional wrestlers, so I could not help you out there. I would love to see, and this is just, we can put a pin in this for another archetype, but like Anne Hathaway in some sort of villainy role or shady role. I feel like she would just be really mean, but she would look so pretty. Like,
yeah, that would be, honestly, I would want Anne Hathaway in like the role of the betrayer. So she's like on the hero's team for a little bit, and then three quarters of the way through the movie, it's like, oh no, she's been working for Jude Law, property tax travel man, this whole time.
That would be perfect. I don't know. Sing a song too.
A musical number. Okay. I love that. Okay. Hear me out. Hear me out for the henchman. Hear me out. Ronda Rousey.
Why don't I know that name off the top of my head? I feel like
she's like a professional fighter who turned to acting.
Oh. Hold on. I know who you mean. Wait. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. Where she can be like, you know, in James Bond, Jaws or whatever, the guy clamps down, that sort of like a villain with a weird superpower that isn't really a superpower. It's just prosthetic teeth or something.
She just has like a bronze fist, like just like, you know.
Ooh, I really like that. Because she could have like a prosthetic arm that's just made of like bronze or like steel or something.
That would be so heavy. But I think it's just a testament to like how strong she is, you know.
I love that. It's a little like Kingsman with the knife feet.
Yeah.
Oh, and whatever her name is, when we get to the names of the characters, it'll have to be just like Bronze Fist or something as the character name.
That would be perfect.
Who do we think for like the tech guy, like the guy on the computer? Do we go classic, old school, like nerdy dude, or are we thinking more like in the Mission Impossible vein where they put Ving Rhames behind the computer?
I'm trying to think. I feel like it would be funny to have some sort of like really young actor. Like they're like some sort of tech whiz and they're like only 12. But I think that that's just like itching my like, I emailed the CIA when I was 11, kind of. Yeah, I'm also looking up young actors, which is slightly weird. Hold on. Yeah.
It's got to be one of the Stranger Things kids, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, okay.
I don't want Millie Bobby Brown, though.
That's the first actor when I looked up young actors was Millie Bobby Brown. And I'm like, no.
What if we did Caleb McLaughlin, who plays Lucas?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That would be so much fun.
Would be good. I feel like he'd be good. Oh, wait. Young Hollywood 2019. Hollywood Reporter. No, go back. Okay, hold on. Okay, all of these people are kind of old. Hold on.
I always forget how good Spy Kids is. I'm just thinking about Spy Kids right now. Okay, just in my brain.
It's really so good. Oh, my God. Ella J. Basco. Did you see Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey?
Yeah. What is... Okay, I love that kid. I think that's a great choice. What's her name again?
Ella J. Basco.
Okay. I'm liking that. What is the age range of our hero? Do we want like a 20 something, like a 30 to 40 something, or are we thinking kids spies all around?
I feel like 20s, and maybe I'm just older and wiser and trying to like indulge myself in some escapism now where I'm like, oh, like a 20 something year old spy. But I think it would be interesting too if you had like I don't know, let me see.
I'm setting the age range because I think it'll help us figure out the best friend and the love interest a little bit.
I agree. I feel like this is falling into a Stranger Things type of paradigm, you know, where you have like an older nemesis and henchman. There aren't really any betrayers in Stranger Things, but I feel like, you know, kind of having those like younger actors and then, or even with the hero and love interest, if it was like 20 somethings, like, like that's still, I don't know. I'm okay with it. I just noticed that as we were going along.
Yeah. I haven't seen Stranger Things. I'm not going to lie to you. I've only seen
Stranger Things.
I have seen half of the first season and all of the third season. I have not seen the second season or the second half of the first season. But I've seen the third season twice all the way through.
I've seen every season many times because my younger sister loves Stranger Things. And that's the only thing that she'll turn on when I come over. But other than that or Harry Potter, which is fine. But yeah, so I'm pretty well acquainted with the ins and outs of Stranger Things.
Of course. Okay, So if we're thinking like 20 something, we can say between 22 and 25 for our hero, then our love interest and best friend should be around that same age. Let's aim for representation. I think that our hero should be LGBTQIA+. So whatever we decide for the love interest, it doesn't matter the gender of the hero. So anyone can be the love interest. My recommendation, oh God, what's his name? He's in Stranger Things, but he's also in Power Rangers.
What? Okay, wait, hold on. I'm trying to think, who's in Stranger Things and also in Power Rangers? I was gonna say my suggestion, I'll put them in the chat. It's slightly younger than the 22 to 25 age range, but Lachlan Watson, they're in, or were in, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Really great actor.
There's no photo. Oh,
there's
here.
No picture on the Wikipedia page.
That's so
there's
weird.
There's no picture. Okay. But yeah, they have a really good like hero kind of disposition.
I dig that. A little younger, but I think that's fine.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm down for this. I like that for sure. Especially because they've got that spy look too.
Right. And that's like that turtleneck headshot. Like, that's great. It's perfect.
A+. Yes. Okay.
I Lachlan. Could be a casting director.
You should be. Lachlan Watson. Then I'm thinking for, oh God, what's their name? For love interest, what about Auli Cravalho?
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, I think that would be good. I could see them together. I think that would be great.
I think it would be just cute as all hell to have them together. And I think Auli would be like the love interest who isn't inherently damsel in distress. Like it might seem like she is, but then Absolutely. She takes control over the situation. And Absolutely. I think that would be phenomenal.
I agree.
Oh God, I copied and pasted and now I just can't just, spell.
Like,
really,
you're like, oh my God.
Just really, really excited about it on this sheet. Okay. Best friend, hear me out, Shameik Moore.
Yeah.
Or is he too old? He's like actually old.
It's not like too old, I feel like.
He might be a little old now that I'm looking at him.
Possibly.
Damn.
But I feel like, I don't know, I wonder, and this is getting more into like plot, but like it could be like a siblings, like a if we're thinking about motivation, like a deceased sibling's best friend, like a deceased like older sibling's best friend.
Okay. So,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Jaden Smith, that would be great. Oh
Jaden Smith would be great. I don't know. I might be wrong. I'm just thinking of the cast of The Get Down now, because The Get Down had a lot of phenomenal young actors. If you haven't seen The Get Down, you absolutely need to. It's a phenomenal historical fiction about hip hop and disco in the 70s, directed by Baz Luhrmann, and it's so good. I think Jaden Smith would be great in the best friend role.
I agree.
Okay. And then we just have their boss. Hear me out. Jake Johnson.
What was Jake Johnson in?
So many things.
I know the name and I've definitely seen it like in...
New Girl is what you would probably know him
from.
Oh my
God. How do I like... It's Nick. I feel like...
It's Nick. But he's in The Mummy with Tom Cruise and he's phenomenal in it. He's the only redeeming quality of that movie. Jurassic World. Other things, I think. Stumptown, he plays like a hardened criminal in Stumptown and was surprisingly a little believable.
I feel like the phrase boss is throwing me off because I feel like I would view it more as like a mentorship role. Almost like a, like, okay, hold on. Baby Driver is not the comparison I want to make because I was going to be like, he's not a mentor. He's manipulating him.
So but you're thinking more like a Master Splinter or a Mr. Miyagi. I was going more like the curmudgeonly old man who tells people no.
Mm.
More like the James Bond's M. Like, no, don't go on that mission. You're going to die and then get us in international trouble. And then he's like, I'm going to do it anyway, Em. I don't care.
That would be great. Jake Johnson would be good.
I think, or anyone from that cast, the New Girl cast, I mean.
casting like Schmidt. Hold on. Who's, I don't know any of their names other than Zooey Deschanel. Max Greenfield. He was in Veronica Mars. Oh my God.
I could see him. I could also see Lamorne Morris.
Oh my
that
God,
would be Winston. Funny.
Absolutely. No, he would. Okay. And I'm solely basing this off his character in New Girl, but he would be very like overly cautious. I feel like he would be like, don't do that because you're going to die. Not like, no, don't do that because it's going to cause international trouble. Like, he would just be like, I worry about you. Like, I would worry if you did this. Like, please don't. And then they do it anyway. And he's like, what the hell, guys? Come on. Like,
I like that. Okay. We're putting him in there. We're casting it. We have the cast. I think we'll come up. Let's off the bat, real quick, fake character names. A good name of a hero. Every action hero, I feel like, is like Jack or John or James, Jimmy, Jordan.
It's got to be like one syllable.
Jason. Okay.
Or like two syllables max. I feel like I can't, like the first name at least. Like yeah. Think about Jude Law saying your name. Like, you know, it can't be, if it did have if it was multi-syllabic, then it would be nice to hear Jude Law say that. But
I'm leaning towards a J name just because of Jason Bourne, James Bond, Jack mm-hmm. Reacher, Jack Ryan, all of those. So I'm thinking Jordan because it's a little, it's gender neutral, it's ambiguous, but it also is like strong, if that makes sense.
I like it. I do. Yeah, I like it. You sold me on that name. I feel like Jordan would be good.
And the last name should be one syllable that ends in an S, I think.
I'm trying to think of like good ones in my head, like good combinations. Ross, would Ross be like too, like Jordan Ross? Like,
I think Jordan Ross works. I think that works. Jordan, because it's a little, it's Jack Reacher, Jack Ryan, Jordan Ross. I dig it.
Oh my God. Wait. I'm just subconsciously falling into this stereotype of JR names.
It's JRs and JBs. That's it.
Yeah.
Only those are the only people, except for Ethan Hunt. He is an outlier.
Yeah.
Everyone else, I think we can just give them a first name or like a big fake name. So like, I think Bronze Fist has to just be Bronze Fist.
Bronze Fist.
Just an epic henchman name.
Absolutely.
Love interest.
I really like the name Ruby. And I feel like either for like anyone, but I feel like for like a love interest, I feel like Ruby is a very like romantic name.
Okay. What's Jude Law's name? Well, Jude Law. What's Jude Law's character's name?
I'm going to search like evil names. I'm getting all of these biblical names.
I think we can go biblical with it.
I think we could too. I feel like that would be, okay, thought catalog, 350 plus evil names you probably shouldn't name your baby. I like it. I think that would be good for us right now. The Absinthe.
Yep. Absinthe. Mm-hmm. I think with the last name, I think Absinthe Kane would be terrifying.
That... One, that sounds like a fake name, but two, that's perfect.
Okay, we're going with it. We're diving in. We don't have a ton of time. Okay.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm very nervous now. Okay, Absinthe Kane.
The best friend, gotta have a super friendly name, right?
What are friendly names? Andrew? Andrew's a friendly name. Cody?
Andrew. Andrew or Cody?
Andrew. Go Andrew.
Ella J. Basco, does she have like a hacker nickname, or is her name just like her name?
I think it would be funny if she had like a leet speak kind of hacker name, like, but a name that she like insisted they call her but then they call her her real name. So I feel like her real name would be like Penelope.
Yeah.
And amazing. Then her hacker name is like Dark Soul, not Dark Souls. Like her hacker name would be like
Master Chief 69. Like
Yeah. It's like she'd continually be like, call me Master Chief, and they'd be like, okay, Penelope, like whatever.
It's gonna be MSTRCHEEF.
Master Chef.
Master Chief. Junior.
Master, no, that would be great. That'd be really good. Okay, the boss. I feel like they could just call him boss.
Yep. We're on a time crunch. This is an impossible mission. I feel like Anne Hathaway is like someone's mom here, right? Like Anne Hathaway is like the adopted mother of Andrew, who betrays them to the property manager.
Could happen.
So mom.
What's like a mom name? Any name is a mom name, you know. Carol. But like Carol.
Carol's a mom name.
Okay. The whole plot.
Okay, I think we can cut opening task of the film. What is the central conflict? Has something to do with international real estate something. Real estate. I'm gonna say terrorism. International real estate terrorism. Yes, they're terrorizing international real estate.
I was thinking, especially because we have a younger cast, something like a Big Fat Liar kind of plot. You have the bigwig who runs the kid over with a limo, steals the movie, and then the whole point is just like vengeance on behalf of the hero. So in terms of bigwig theft, vengeance on behalf... Yeah, I feel like...
I'm going to put, for primary locations, I'm going to put like Monaco, Miami, and we need like one more big city. Mississippi?
No.
Mississippi?
I'm sticking with the theme. Monaco, Miami, and...
I want Niagara Falls.
That sounds perfect.
I think that, and that can tie in with the cool stunt. I think there should be like a boat chase in Miami, right?
A boat chase in Miami.
And a casino scene in Monaco.
Obviously. Like a rappelling scene. They're rappelling from the ceiling. You know, you got the laser, you've got the laser grid, all that stuff. And then the Niagara Falls clearly has to be a barrel going over the side of the falls.
Barrel chase. It's got to be a chase sequence, or it's got to be like a... Or escape from death.
I feel like that could be the moment of betrayal. Is Carol's helping them, and then instead of like, I don't know, maybe being like, here, hide in this barrel, and then just like shoves them over the edge.
Oh, that would be great. So the twist is Carol shoves them.
This sounds like a great action movie so far.
So the twist is she falls. Or she shoves them over the edge of Niagara in a barrel. Is that part of the nail-biting resolution? Or what's the big timed element? Because most big action movies have a major time element.
I feel like it could be like a Lazarus type of situation. Like they come back from presumed death.
Okay.
And then scramble to...
I think they scramble to foil the plot of
precisely
the nemesis. Yeah, and there's like fight sequences in and around all of these things. Oh God, we have 30 seconds left. What do we need? Just the theme title. The theme song matters less than the title. We need to come up with a name for it. 10 seconds.
Monkeys in a barrel.
Monkeys in a barrel. Okay, our time is... We succeeded. We succeeded our mission with a couple.
I realized the phrase is a barrel full of monkeys.
Monkey.
It's a monkey in a barrel.
Nah, it's perfect. Monkey in a barrel works.
Okay, great.
Oh, God. Yep. I think this is excellent. I think Lachlan Watson or Oli Cravallo, Jaden Smith, Jude Law, and everyone else, and Anne Hathaway is here, and there's some sort of musical number, and Bronze Fist is here.
I'm over the edge of Niagara Falls. Yeah.
Or maybe she's like, she's working as like a lounge singer in Monaco. I don't, that there's would... that, then it would justify a random musical number. I love this. This was phenomenal. Well, thank you so much for indulging me in this mission. Our next mission will be a little different. It might be a little more Tom Cruise specific. So think about Tom Cruise a little bit before the next time I have you on.
Will do. I will.
Are there any announcements you'd like to give before we get off the call in regards to 14 East or the election or Detroit Free Press? Anything you'd like to shamelessly plug here?
Ooh, the big thing, like if you have any questions about the election or the voting process, or issues that are important to you, you can always share it with us at 14 East Mag on Twitter or Instagram. I'm trying to think what else for Detroit Free Press. If you're a Michigan voter, I am always able to be contacted. My Twitter for journalism purposes is at @journo_cam. Or you can just search Cam Rodriguez and I'll pop up probably. But yeah, I'd be happy to talk to you about voting or about militias or about getting rejected from the CIA or about any kind of spy movie or TV show or voting, because I like all of those things. So hit me up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for hopping on the call today. We're going to go to a quick song break, and after this, I will go into a synopsis, fast facts, and data breakdown. Hello, and welcome back. You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd, and this is Tom Talks. Thanks once again to Cam for coming on the show today, and that you just listened to was Adam Clayton and Larry Mullen of U2 covering the theme song from Mission Impossible. Super spliced, of course, with some sound effects from the film, which makes it a little bit weird, but we're fine with that, truly. This, of course, is the part of the show where we go into a synopsis and fast facts and a data breakdown. So without further ado, let me tell you what happens. Pretty much shot for shot in this movie. We're going to go through a clean synopsis of it. Movie starts, Jim Phelps and his latest Impossible Missions Force, or IMF team, who had just finished a mission in Kiev, are dispatched to stop the theft of a CIA non-official cover list from the American embassy in Prague by rogue agent Alexander Galitzin. However, the mission unexpectedly fails. The list is stolen, Phelps is shot, and his wife Claire and another agent die in a car bombing. The rest of the team, including Galitzin, are eliminated by unknown assassins and supposed tech malfunctions. Ethan Hunt is the sole survivor. Ethan Hunt is Tom Cruise's character. So meeting with IMF director Eugene Kittredge, Hunt reveals his awareness of a second IMF team sent to monitor them and learns the list Galitzin stole was a decoy, and the mission was a setup to lure out a mole within the IMF who is believed to be working with an arms dealer known as Max as part of Job 314. As Hunt is the only surviving member, Kittredge suspects him of being the mole. Hunt flees, using explosive chewing gum given to him by a fellow agent before the mission to cover his escape. Returning to the Prague safe house, Hunt realizes Job 314 refers to Bible verse Job 314, Job being the mole's code name. Claire arrives at the safe house, explaining that she escaped the car bombing after Phelps aborted the mission. Hunt arranges a meeting with Max and warns her that she had been given a fake list on a disc equipped with a tracking device. Max and her agents escape, taking Hunt with them, just before a CIA team raids their location. Hunt promises to deliver the real list in return for $10 million and Job's identity. Claire chooses to join Ethan, despite his initial protests against it, stating that since she is alive, the IMF will consider her a co-conspirator to Ethan, whether she goes with him or not. Hunt and Claire recruit two disavowed IMF agents, computer expert Luther Stickle and pilot Franz Krieger. They infiltrate CIA headquarters in Langley, steal the real list while narrowly avoiding detection, and flee to London. Kittredge, detecting the theft, has Hunt's mother and uncle falsely arrested for drug trafficking. He provides media coverage of the arrest, forcing Hunt to contact him from Liverpool Street Station. Hunt allows the CIA to trace him to London before hanging up, but is surprised to find Phelps nearby. Phelps recounts surviving the shooting, naming Kittredge as the mole. Hunt realizes, though, that Phelps is in fact the mole, having found a Bible with Gideon's stamp that Phelps had stolen from the Drake Hotel in Chicago during a previous assignment known to Hunt's team. Hunt pieces together how Phelps betrayed the team. He programmed the elevator to kill a technician, faked being shot, and had the car rigged to explode. Hunt also suspects Krieger in the deaths of the other IMF members, including Gallatin in Prague, having recognized his distinctive knife. He is unsure whether Claire was involved. Hunt arranges with Max to exchange the list aboard the TGV train to Paris the next day and secretly sends tickets to Kittredge. On the train, Hunt remotely directs Max the list. Max verifies it and directs Hunt to the baggage car, where he can find both the money and Job. Hunt calls Claire and tells her to meet him there. Meanwhile, Stickle uses a jamming device to prevent Max from uploading the data to her servers. Claire reaches the baggage car, finds Phelps, and tells him Hunt will arrive shortly. She questions the idea of killing Hunt, since they will need a fall guy, but Phelps reveals himself to be Hunt in a mask, exposing her as a co-conspirator. When the real Phelps arrives and takes the money at gunpoint, Hunt dons a pair of video glasses that relays Phelps' image to Kittredge, blowing Phelps' cover as a mole. Phelps threatens to kill Hunt, but kills Claire instead when she tries to talk him out of it. She climbs on the roof of the train where Krieger is waiting with a helicopter and a tether. Angry over Claire's murder, Hunt chases after him. As Phelps escapes, Hunt launches himself towards him. Hunt connects the tether to the train itself, forcing the helicopter into the channel tunnel after the train. Hunt attaches explosive chewing gum on the helicopter's windshield, and it kills Krieger and Phelps while he himself jumps to safety at the last second. That's an iconic thing in all these Mission Impossible movies. He always jumps clear at the very last second. Kittredge arrests Max and recovers the list, and then reinstates Hunt and Stickle as IMF. Sorry. Kittredge arrests Max and recovers the list and reinstates Hunt and Stickle as IMF agents. Hunt is unsure about returning to the team, but on the flight home, an attendant uses a coded phrase to ask him if he is ready to take on a new mission. And I believe that's where the second movie starts, or at least they make it seem like that. But I do like this one quite a bit in the realm of Mission Impossible movies. It is, I think, my second or third favorite, but I think number-wise, it might be one of the top. Let's jump into Fast Facts. So the director of this one is Brian De Palma, who is a phenomenal director. He directed Scarface and The Untouchables and Carrie, and he really did a phenomenal job with this movie. He really added a lot that was positive for the thriller elements of the film, and he also relied heavily on Tom Cruise doing his own stunts, and that's kind of where that started, was with this movie. Tom wanted to do as much as he could. The writers for this one, it's of course based on the TV series by Bruce Geller, who also wrote one episode of Shirley Temple's storybook, but we don't see an eight movie film franchise based on that. So his main contribution to the history of cinema is his creation of Mission Impossible. The story was written by Steve Zalian and David Cope. And the screenplay was written by David Cope and Robert Towne. Steve Zalian, you would probably know for writing The Irishman and Schindler's List and Moneyball. He's got credits on all of those films. David Cope, you probably would know from Jurassic Park, Spider-Man, like the old Tobey Maguire first Spider-Man. He also wrote Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, so not all of them are winners. And then Robert Towne, we mentioned him a couple weeks ago because he also wrote the screenplay for The Firm. Cast of this movie is pretty awesome, but a little more under the radar. It's not one of those 10 A-lister movies that Tom Cruise often finds himself in. He's kind of the biggest name in it currently. And some other large names enter the series a little bit later, but he really carries this first one. So Jim Phelps is played by John Voight, who is in Deliverance and Anaconda and Holes and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. He's also in a TV movie from, I think, 2005 called Karate Dog. And that might be the most impressive part of his resume, is that he, a very serious actor, was able to break down the walls of his seriousness and play a dad in a movie about a dog who does karate. Claire is played by Emmanuelle Bert, who is a French actress. I don't speak French, so I honestly don't know the titles of any of her other movies, because she pretty much only does French films, but she's pretty popular in French cinema. Kittredge is played by Henry Chersney, who was in The Pink Panther, and he's also rumored to be in Mission Impossible 7 and 8, which is kind of exciting. Krieger is played by Jean Reno, who is relatively popular. He's from Leon the Professional and Pink Panther 1 and 2. He's also in Flushed Away. He plays Le Frog, and I love that. That's one of my favorite fun facts of the day. Luther is played by Ving Rhames from Pulp Fiction, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Lilo and Stitch, and a bunch of other stuff. Ving Rhames is really just an excellent actor on the whole, and he's one who stays with the series through pretty much the whole thing. We, of course, don't get Benji yet. Benji comes in a little bit later, but this movie, we get Luther. Sarah is played by Kristen Scott Thomas, who's also in The English Patient, for Four Weddings and a Funeral, and Richard III. Max is played by Vanessa Redgrave, who plays the Queen in Cars 2. So she's within the Cars universe as British royalty. She was also in the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. So a couple Indiana Jones connections within this cast and crew. And she does a lot of Shakespeare work. That's kind of, Vanessa Redgrave is like old school British actress, does a lot of Shakespeare. And then Hannah, who I don't think I mentioned in this, I don't really know where she is in this film, is played by Ingeborga Dapkanite. I don't know how to pronounce that name, but she has done Red Sparrow, the other spy film, and was also in 7 Years in Tibet. This movie actually had a pretty international cast, which made me happy, because it's got Jean Reno and Emmanuelle Bert, lots of European actors, and that's something that the later ones don't do as much. They pretty much focus on American interests, which is a little disappointing, but I think that the first one being as international as it is kind of sets up the rest of the series for the ability to travel and for the ability to grow. Some fun facts. This was actually the last motion picture from any major studio to be released on Betamax. So this ended it. This ended Betamax. This was also Tom's first producer credit. So he actually got to produce this film, which I think is pretty cool. He's had one writing credit so far, but this is his first time producing. This is also the only Mission Impossible movie where Tom Cruise does not fire a gun. That's big. There's not even a gun, like a shootout. There's not even a shootout in this movie. And that's something that's such a staple of so many action films that it's good to find one that doesn't have that. Oh, also, Emilio Estevez is in it. I don't really know where. He's just kind of there. He shows up for a couple seconds. Of course, Emilio Estevez and Tom Cruise were also in The Outsiders together, so it's a fun little connection there. But yeah, he's in it for a couple seconds. And I know that some of the stunts some other people recreated in real life. I know a helicopter flew through a train tunnel in Brazil in, I want to say, 2006. But yeah, this is a fun movie. I do love the first Mission Impossible. Data-wise, if we go into a little bit of a data breakdown, I think this is one of the highest performing Mission Impossibles, and I think highest performing to date. As you know, I gauge all of these films on factors of enjoyment, engagement, quality, iconography, and the Tom Cruise factor. Of course, this one has a high Tom Cruise factor. It has a perfect Tom Cruise factor. It is the first one so far to get a perfect 20. Top Gun got a 19. Which puts our total score at an 89 out of 100. The only thing that it was low on was quality, because it's not a super like high quality film. Like the CG, the effects are a little bit low quality. They were high quality for the time, but in hindsight, there was better stuff happening at that same time. So yeah, 89 out of 100 though is pretty pretty good in the grand scheme of things. I think it might be one of the highest scores that we see overall. I don't know if I ever break that. But yeah, that was Mission Impossible. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tune in next week to hear me talk about Jerry Maguire with my mom. Thanks again. And as always, stay gold, Pony Boy.